Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to the Coaching Coordinator Podcast. I'm always excited to talk ball with our guest today. He's a guy I've known, I think, since around 2009, 2010, when I went out and visited him in Jenks, Oklahoma, and talked to him about what was developing at that time into the R4 system, and just have loved to see his progression as a coach, and from his first book, from Headset to Helmet, to his second book, Adapt or Die, and now his third book, which is coming out, called What is Open. Always excited to have this guest on, Dub Maddox. Great to have you here.
Thanks, Keith, for having me on. Excited to be back.
So, Dub, we've progressed on from R4, Headset to Helmet. We went into Adapt or Die, and the new book is called What is Open. Give us an overview about the book and what you put into it.
Well, basically, this book has been 8 years in the making, and it's the most important question that I think you have to answer as an offensive coordinator. And that is kind of the journey I went on when I first became a coordinator, to find out, you know, how do we identify what open is? And I think if you sit down and ask your players or your coaches, or ask an expert coach on how he defines that, you're going to come away disappointed or confused, because everybody has a different answer on what open is. And so that is something that I felt early in my career I really struggled with, especially when pressure hit in big games, is the ability to process open and to determine what plays can create that open space and to attack it really became difficult for me. And so what we found is, with R4, the system was built on a passing, was an operating system for the passing game. We had that in play. We could teach quarterbacks how to accelerate and read the reality of open from a passing perspective. When I became a coordinator, what I quickly realized is what the quarterback does on a passing play, I have to do as a coordinator on every play. I have to be able to process the post-snap movements and deduce from those on what the open space is, how to create it, or, you know, how to overcome different movements that take it away. And my first year as a coordinator, we were a really good team. I was at Jenks High School, had 11 returning starters coming back, and we rolled through all of our opponents. I think we set the all-time state scoring record for a single season at 53 points a game. And I'm thinking, man, this coordinating deal is pretty easy. You just call a play, it works, and I'm feeling pretty good about myself. But we get into the finals against our rival, and we go up 21-7. And I'm thinking, man, this is unbelievable. You know, halftime, we're in there, we're making a few adjustments, but, you know, going to be undefeated, state championship first year. Feeling really good about myself. When we go out in the second half, turn it over, they make some defensive adjustments, run a trick play in the fourth quarter. And next thing I know, we're down, I think, by five with about a minute and 30 left. And we have the ball in the 20, and we have a minute and 30 left. And at that moment, my play sheet felt like it was a million miles away from me. I look at our offensive line coach. I'm like, hey, what do you like here? And he's looking at me like, hey, this is your job, man. I'm on the goal. You know, you need a goal line play. I got it. This is your gig. And, you know, I call up on the box, you know, hey, what do you guys like up there? And it's just crickets chirping. And I'm looking at those 11 players in the huddle as we're on the sidelines getting ready to go out. And I felt like I was on an island. And I knew I had one good play left. We ran that play and it didn't score. And the next five plays I called were futile. And we ended up losing that game. And it was in that moment, in that loss, that I realized that I didn't do a good job and I cost us that game, and I wasn't prepared and I didn't have a process to read the reality of what I've seen and to be able to perform under pressure. The pressure really made me blind. It made me confused, and I needed help in that moment, and I didn't have help, and it was not anybody's fault but mine, because I didn't have a process to empower other coaches and players to help me read the reality and give advice and what we need to do in that moment. So that set me on a journey to figure out a better way. And so we looked at that offseason at what R4 does for quarterbacks and decision-making. And I thought, can we take that same process that we teach our quarterbacks how to read the reality of space under pressure on a pass play? Can we create a system that mirrors those concepts and put it into a coach construct for players and coaches to read the reality of space for run plays, pass plays, game planning, play calling. I needed to accelerate my decision-making under pressure, not just in games, but during the week of practice, during the weekend work week. I mean, we're grinding 14, 15-hour days, you know. We need to accelerate everything, and so that's what R4 was. It's basically, it's an operating system that solves complex problems at a level of extraordinary expertise, and it's modeled after some of the best, most successful companies and products that have been produced in other industries.
And I want to dig into a little bit of the overview of that system. I had the opportunity when I was speaking at the Glazer Clinic to catch the second half of your last presentation, and I told you I took like 6 pages of notes in about a 20-minute period. Was just blown away by the process, and was thinking to myself like, "Wow, this is incredible." You know, why aren't people doing it this way? But we'll get into that a little bit. I'm really interested in these stories, and it's something that you know you've moved to. You've done a great job of making some analogies as you moved into your second book, Adapt or Die, and how that related to some things you had learned from the U.S. military. I'm interested to hear some of those analogies and what you found in some of the best companies in the world and how they organize and plan for and find ways to execute what they're doing successfully.
Yes, well, some of the stories that we go into the book, for example, are when companies try to innovate or create knowledge, they have to look outside their industry. That's the best ways to learn. So if I want to become an expert football coach, where do I go? I mean, that was my deal. It's like, if I want to become the best offensive coordinator in the industry, where do I go to learn from? And so when you go and you get under a mentor or you look for that guy, what you have to do is to submit to their way of thinking. And you're submitting to all their experiences and the way they perceive reality. The question is that reality and those perceptions, are they the best way? And so when I first started out my career coaching, we at Broken Arrow worked for Rick Jones. In our first year, we were running a flex bone option offense. And that second year, we transitioned to a no huddle spread offense that was modeled after Northwestern. And Randy Walker was the head coach at the time. And this was back in like 2001, just when tempo was kind of becoming on the stage, especially in high school. And so we, in that first year, shattered all kinds of offensive records. In 2002, we went to the first state championship appearance in school history. So my perception of that offensive system was it was the best. And it really simplified all of the learning curve that I had to make as a coach. By spreading everything out and going tempo, we saw more static fronts, and things were a lot simpler for me to process as a coach. So I bought in and thought that was the only and the best way to do things. And 2 years later, I go to take a job at Naples, Florida. The head coach there was an expert in the single wing offense. And then our offensive coordinator was an expert in the unbalanced single wing, like a spread. It was kind of a hybrid between spread and single wing. And, you know, I was perceived in my own mind at that time, as a young dumb coach, an expert in the spread, no huddle, Northwestern style. And so what happened was, is in those coaching rooms, those war rooms there, you had three different perceptions on what the best offenses were with three different languages. And so what happened was, is we were speaking, you know, I was speaking Chinese, one coach was speaking French, one was speaking English. That is not a fun environment to be in as a coach. And I think a lot of coaches, they live in that environment where everyone comes into a room and everyone's fighting and willing to die on a hill for what they believe is the best offense or the best play or the best way to call things. And that is a miserable environment to be in. And what I learned through that is we eventually submitted to the head coach, ran the single wing, went 5-5. We were mostly a sophomore field team. And what I learned in that was that, you know what, maybe there's better things out there that work. And so I learned that, hey, you know, the single wing, there's some validity to this offense. There's some good stuff. And then I go to Jinx. They were built on a more of a West Coast pro style. You know, we're going to run the ball at you. We're going to play action you. And I saw the benefits of having a tight end and a fullback. So immediately there, I learned something else. You know, this is good too. So what I wanted to try to see if it was possible to create a holistic offensive football system that takes the best practices of every offense in football and bring it into an environment where those things are connected and you can run everything. You can run the best practices with a common language and a process. And that I don't know if that's ever been done before, but that's what we set out to do with R4. And what we did is we looked outside, you know, other companies that have done similar things with that. And so, so one example is a company out in Japan. What they did is they were a technology company. They were trying to make a bread machine that made the best bread, an in-home bread machine that can make the best bread in the world. And they struggled with developing bread that actually came out and was cooked right. The crust was always burnt, and then the dough in the center was still doughy. And they were really frustrated. They couldn't create a machine that could replicate easily this good quality bread they wanted to cook. So they looked at this hotel in Osaka, Japan, that was known to make the best bread in the region. And they sent one of their developers out there, and he had to train under this expert cook for a year to try to learn, okay, what were the techniques or the strategies that he does well that is able to produce this world-renowned bread? And when he asked him, how do you do this? How do you make this bread? He couldn't communicate how he did that. And as coaches, I think that's what I find a lot. When I get around an expert coach, or I ask them, how do you define open? How do you know this play is the best play? Or you talk to your coaches on your staff, well, what do you want to run this week? Well, we're going to run power. Well, why do you like power here? And a lot of times guys struggle to explain in detail the why behind what they think is going to be the best, whether it's the best offense, the best play. And the problem is because they've had years of experience doing it successfully, but they never set back, and they don't have a language to decode what makes that offense or that play the best versus that particular look. And that's what this company found when they were trying to develop this bread, is this head chef did not have the language in the process coded. So he couldn't teach it to others. And I think, Keith, that's the biggest roadblock that we have as coaches. You know, some of the best coaches in the world, you know, we sit down and we try to extract what their knowledge base from them, and they don't have a language or a process to teach it to us. And so that's what I tell coaches. You know, they ask, well, what is R4? You know, I kind of do this stuff anyway. I kind of run these plays and this and that. But I try to tell them, it's not what you know. It's not about all the information you know. It's, do you have a process to distill that 30 years of experience and knowledge into a first year head coach and get him on your level as fast as possible? And that's what we need as coaches. As a head coach now, I need to quickly be able to go into my program. I got hired on in May last year, and I had a couple months to get everybody on the team and on the staff on the same page. So I needed an accelerator to distill all this information in a little amount of time, and R4 provided that for me. And that's what this company in Japan learned. So what this developer did was he was able to extract the secret techniques and code it that he learned from this head chef, and he's able to go back to the factory, and they developed this ribbed system. And the secret in making this bread was in the twisting component and how they twisted it when they needed it. And so he was able to mimic with these tools this secret strategy that this chef had just developed over experience and years of training. And so they're able to copy that and mimic it. And they ended up developing this bread machine that was one of the highest sellers in the world at that time. And so I think that's what R4 does. It allows a coach to go in and extract the things that the non-negotiables, the things that matter most within systems and what the defense is doing, and it puts it in a codified language that allows you to replicate those best strategies no matter what offense you run. And so really that's kind of how we came to develop this system for game planning and play calling.
And I know you've made the analogy before when you put R4 together, and this really works the exact same way as thinking about pass concepts, that it's really not about all the different schemes you can do within this, because it applies to everything. You have an operating system, so it doesn't matter what offense you're looking at. If you have a well-designed system, right, where you've put it together that it's not just a conglomeration of plays, that you understand how things fit together, now you can apply this operating system of the R4 game planning and really figure out what do you need to do against a certain opponent. Because I agree with you, I've been in those rooms, I've fought in those battles where you're spending half your day, you know, arguing for a point because you think this is best, and getting into philosophical conversations, and it not only is it miserable, it's actually very inefficient, right? You, those 16-hour days don't have to be 16-hour days. Not that you're not doing the work, you're just working in a smarter way because you have a very defined process for what goes into a game plan.
Yeah, without a doubt. I think one of the things that R4 does in today's game, in the modern game of football as it is now, if you're living in a pre-snap world, you're essentially dead. I mean, you have to be able to process post-snap movements and understand what those mean. And you got to have a language that informs the strengths and weaknesses of those movements. And I think that's where I really struggled as a coach when I first started coaching, was I lived in a whiteboard world. And we kind of live in that on Twitter when we're going back and forth with offensive and defensive coaches. You know, what are you going to use to attack this coverage, or what coverage stops this pass concept? And we go back and forth. And you know, anybody can draw up a play that can neutralize or attack anything in football. You give me 5 minutes, I can figure out a play that's going to attack a coverage. That's not coaching. Coaching is the ability to quickly understand the weakness of a coverage, but really it's a layer deeper. You got to understand that your strengths are actually a weakness. And that's what R4 identifies. It allows you to grade the personnel that you're seeing on film. We have a grading process, and it's the best thing we do, the ability to grade the post-snap reactions of defenders and identify what those strengths are. But what you got to understand is that for every strength, that is a weakness. For example, a couple of years ago, my wife made me take this strength finder test that she had, that her company made her take. And so I did this strength finder test and found my top 5 strengths. And I'm like, oh, this is great, man. This is really helpful. And what I learned in that book was that there's a balcony and a basement to every strength. So, your strengths are your balconies, but every strength has a weakness. And if you are blind to those, what those weaknesses could be, you're going to do a lot more damage than you are good. And the same way goes in football. We might have that 5-star corner out there we're trying to attack, and he has a lot of strengths, and we're thinking, well, we got to stay away from that guy entirely. Well, there's actually weaknesses to his strengths, and R4 identifies what those are with the common language and a grading process. And I think that's how you can get a competitive advantage as a coach, is when you know how to read that reality, identify what those strengths mean, and in turn what their basements are with those strengths, you can make sure that you're calling concepts that neutralize that to your advantage and attack open space.
You talked about being, a Northwestern type of offensive coach at one point, really using tempo to get vanilla. I don't know, and I'm not sure what your philosophy is on it, but mine at least is, I don't know that necessarily works today, because I've seen and I've talked to coaches right here on this podcast about the tools they've developed to be able to operate fast on defense too and stay out of having to play vanilla because the other team's going tempo. So I just think the whole game has sped up in terms of tempo. So saying that tempo is the almighty factor in this, I'm not sure that applies anymore. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I think there are no absolutes in football, and you have to be adaptable. And that's what the whole R4 system is based on, accelerating adaptability and staying one step ahead of the decision-making process of the defensive coordinator. And so I think that anytime you just do one thing. Now, if you're the better team and you have better personnel, you can absolutely do tempo. You can run every play you want and it's going to work. But in those high-level games and all things equal, you have to be able to adapt to what you're seeing. So I think changing tempos is way more effective than just being one tempo the entire game.
From the standpoint of being a play caller too, and I think it takes a humble coach to even admit it, because I hear a lot of guys just say, oh, I call by feel, I have an instinct for it or whatever. I know there are those days where – you're making those calls and you feel like you're in the zone. I think some of it is because you're seeing things like you should as a coach, but really I think the process here gives you probably better definition to it. At the very least, it gives you a fail safe when maybe you get out of the zone. How has this in terms of that type of style, because I'm sure you hear that all the time, how does this prove superior in the long run?
Because this process creates mental models that allow you to read the reality of what you're seeing. And that's what you'll find when you study experts in any field. And the development of an expert system was developed from artificial intelligence. With you know, the rise of artificial intelligence, what they had to do was they had to look at the human brain and study how an expert brain operates. And it's more than just dumping all the information into a machine. A machine that's designed to think like a human expert has to have both the experience knowledge and the explicit book knowledge. And what you need is you need a bridge to connect those two to create a mental model. And so that's something else that we study heavily with these expert systems that were created from developing artificial intelligence was, you know, how does the human expert brain operate and how are they able to accelerate those gut instinctual feels? And it's through those mental models that they're constantly updating. So the R4 system is really, it's a bridge built by an interface and an inference engine. And the interface is the halo. And what the halo is, it stands for hard deck, apex, line of center, and the outside space. And that gives you four key static frames of reference on a field that allow you to process movement post-snap. I mean, without frames of reference, you cannot make informed decisions and you cannot recognize patterns. And pattern recognition is the key here. And you look at the best defenses, they're pattern reading the offense. And I think the best offensive systems and the offensive coaches have the ability to pattern read. We can accelerate that through the common language and the frames of reference of the halo. And then our post-snap interface mechanism is the cap. And the cap is what we're reading to determine the reality of open space. And the cap stands for coverage, alignment, and the personnel ability of defenders. And so if we can measure those and we can communicate those in a common language, we can now update and generate better mental models to determine where space is. So you think about the FedEx logo, right? Okay, the FedEx logo, if you're not aware, has a hidden arrow between the E and the X. And you may know that, a lot of coaches don't. Mm-hmm. But when you understand that the E and the X in that logo creates a arrow, your eyes immediately go to it anytime you look at it. You can't help it. It's called negative space. And negative space is a concept that artists use to create pictures that are unseen to most people, but you can only see it when you have those frames of reference. So R4 identifies the key frames of reference in football with a common language that allow you to see where the negative space is on the field. So like you may talk to a coach that's been coaching an offense for a number of years, and he just knows exactly what play to call and where to go. Well, he's seeing that negative space through years of experience. And so a couple years ago in 2012, I was in an invite-only clinic at Auburn. And Coach Jones actually got me into this. I piggybacked on his name there. He got me into this coaching clinic at Auburn. And there was about 30 coaches in that room that were – it was invite-only. And there were some really good high school coaches in there. And we're in there, and we're Coach Bobby Bentley at the time was Gus Malzahn's lead offensive analyst. He's now at South Carolina, mm-hmm. Coaching Division I football there. So Bobby's in there, and he's talking about the genius of Coach Malzahn and kind of how he breaks down plays, how he game plans. And he was talking about how at halftime, Coach Bentley's job was to go in, and his job was to write down all of the defensive looks against every formation that they had run in the first half. So he would quickly run down into the locker room. He's drawing up all the looks. And he said, Coach Malzahn can come in and just take one glance at each of those pictures, and he can immediately know the adjustment that needs to be made. He can just know what he knows what open is because he's been doing it for 20, 30 years in his offense. So I raised my hand. I said, Coach Bentley, does Coach Malzahn have a way to teach you how to see space and do what he does? And he just kind of paused, and he was kind of shocked. He said, no. He goes, but if he did, that'd be freaking awesome. And that's what R4 gives you. It allows you to take all of that 30 years of knowledge that an expert has and code it like that bread maker did for that Japanese company I talked about earlier, and put it in a way through consistent frames of reference and a language that allows you to see that hidden arrow that the FedEx logo has in it. And so there is power in the ability to align your staff and your players to see space and reality through that same lens. And what happens is now you have help as a coach. So in that state championship game now, I have valuable information given to me by people I trust because we're seeing things the same. And I can now recalibrate myself and have some buoys to keep me from sinking under the pressure, and I can make those better play calls because we're seeing space the same.
Well, I'd say in that, just in that thought process right there, and I'm sure you can relate to this, think back to being that young coach doing this maybe first, second, third year. Your job on game day and in some situations, I really felt this way in game planning too, was kind of sit down and shut up, right? Let the experts, right. Let the guys who know what they're doing do their thing. You didn't find a lot of ways to give input. Those guys carried the bulk of the load. Maybe you picked up some things along the way as you're watching them do their work or maybe asking them questions, but early on in your coaching career, you didn't necessarily get those opportunities. And now with a system like this, you're accelerating not just your process and your game planning and getting to where you need to be, but you're accelerating the development of that coach as well.
And that is the biggest thing I think we as coaches, especially head coaches, need. You know, we talk about culture all the time and creating culture for our players, and culture is a big word.
Exactly.
Well, my belief is this: if my culture on my team starts with our coaching staff, and if we can't create a culture that gets us all on the same page and empowers everyone to do a job, see space the same, and work well together, then how can we go out and coach our kids to do it? And that's a problem I see with a lot of staffs, is they preach teamwork, culture, sacrifice, you know, serving, and but yet when you look at their staffs, it's the most dysfunctional group of people you've ever seen, because everybody is seeing space different. Everybody's, you know, fighting for their stake or their title. And R4, that this is a chapter we dedicate in the book, is on what R4 does for coaching staff, is it breaks down those barriers and those fragmentations within staffs, because it allows everyone to get on the same page, see space the same. And that's the job of a coordinator. My job is to make sure that I can get that first year coach on a level that's equal to that of a 15-year coach. And R4 gives me the ability to do that, where before I didn't have it. So I would be on a game plan my first couple years of coordinating. I'd be over in the corner, and I was like a hoarder, and I would just watch film, and I have all my notes, and I'm doing all the work, and other guys are just watching, you know, games on TV. They might be on YouTube, you know, looking at funny videos, and, you know, I'm getting frustrated with them, but it's really my fault because I haven't empowered them. And the reason why I didn't do it is I didn't have a process or a language, a workflow to take them through on what their job is and how to do it. And that's what R4 did for me. Our game planning sessions and our meetings are so much more fun now, and we can get in, get out. Everybody's empowered. Everybody's seeing space the same, and we're doing more with less now because we are seeing space. We're seeing that negative space. We're seeing that hidden arrow in the FedEx logo, and it just empowers everyone.
I think this is a good place to take a quick break to let you know about our system for developing leadership and culture, which we put together with Focus 3 and Brian Kite. It's called Lead Now in the R Factor. Those are available at usafootball.com/Focus3 for a deep discount. You're going to want to check that out and create your playbook for culture. Let's get back to our conversation with Dub Maddox. You beat me to the punch on that, because that was my next observation in this was exactly that this is actually a tool to help create your culture, a foundation for it, because it's, you know, I see so many times we throw up those words on T-shirts and paint them on our weight room walls and put them up in our locker room and, you know, wrap doors with them, etc. But it's exactly like you said, we go back to that room where everybody's fighting for their stake and not working together, not pulling the same direction, because things haven't been, as you said, coded for them in a certain way. The processes have not been established that, you know, you're not getting the behaviors you want out of those people. You guys aren't aligned because the system didn't set it up that way for you. You actually have obstacles for it because of the way you're working, and what you've done here is actually removed those obstacles. So not only are you developing the coach, you're developing your culture as well. And I think you would probably find this true now that when you get a suggestion from somebody, or I don't even think it's a suggestion anymore in the way you operate, it's what you guys determine together. Like, they're probably able to call plays the way you would because they see it the right way, because there's a process, because you've coded it, they can see space, all those things, etc. You have essentially now a staff full of experts rather than, again, having that low-level apprentice, that guy who's just learning, that everybody is leveled up by this.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that one of the biggest benefits and some of my best moments with the development of this system is not just the coaches getting on that level, it's the players. So, I mean, there's numerous times in games now where our players are coming to the sideline and they are making the next best play call before I can give it out of my mouth. And that is really where you go to another level. And really what R4 does, another thing that we talk about in the book is about the ability for the formational grids to develop and create storyboards. And these R4 formational storyboards are basically a platform that allow you as a coach to ask the most important question that the defense is going to do to take away an anticipated play and how to network those plays together into a workflow that can easily be communicated and accelerated. And so, you know, anybody can draw up a power pass, you know, a screen, and we can connect those four plays. But the ability to do, you know, multiple plays within different personnel groups and formations and jump in and out, that's a challenge. So what we did is we looked at how movie making companies back in the 1930s, when movies, motion pictures started to come into play, how they would create storyboards that could link concepts together. And then if you think about stories that are written, I don't know if you remember these books, but when I was a kid, they had the choose your own adventure stories.
Right.
And so you would read a book and it would never end the same. And so every point in the chapter, you would have a decision to make. Am I going to, you know, go down this left turn, or am I going to, you know, go off the cliff here? And the story never ended the same. And based on the outcome, you had to make another decision. Well, that's how play calling occurs in a game. How you anticipate things working out. There's several different roads that you know could take place on just one play call. And so that storyboard allows us to create a network to ask the most important questions and to have those answers ready to go. And that's what makes the best doctors. The best doctors in the industry aren't the ones that know all of the book information about everything. It's the doctors that know the best question and the right answer to that question to ask. So it's the questions that they ask that dictate, you know, how, and the answers they know with based on those questions, how they dictate how good they are. You know, I mean, what do doctors do? They go in and you give them a symptom and they have to backward chain events to determine based on those questions, do you have cancer or a cold? And that misdiagnosis could kill a guy, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we're doing as play callers. We have to be able to see an outcome on the field in real time. And we have to quickly have to backward chain events to know, okay, was that play not successful because of a fundamental breakdown? Or was it not successful because of personnel issue or mismatch, some sort of a thing they did post-snap? And we have to come up with those answers in seconds. And the grid allows us to play that out before it's been played to have those answers ready. So what it allows you to do is storyboard your plays in sequence. And so now we can set players down on a Monday and we can tell the game plan just like I'm reading a bedtime story to a child. And when you can tell story through concepts and what the defense is going to do to take space away, man, acceleration of information just goes through the roof.
Yeah, that's what I noticed as you were talking about that you really can play the game ahead of time. And I remember just reading Bill Walsh's book, Finding the Winning Edge, how he talked about especially game planning, you know, and his reason for doing openers, right? Putting together the beginning of the game in the office is that you were doing it in the calm and cool of the office rather than in the chaos of game day. And essentially, you've not only done it with saying, okay, this is where we begin the game, but you've done it for every phase of it. You know, as I was sitting in your talk that day, it was, you know, just in my mind, okay, he's handled, you know, the base part of the game plan. How are situations handled? What about third downs? What about red zone? And you were giving an overview in this. You did not necessarily go into all the details of it, but you answered all those questions within the 25 minutes or so that I was there in that room. And just showing that overview of this actually takes care of every single part of it, all the situations, all your contingencies, the stuff that, you know, when we look at what Bill Walsh did, all the things he believed in, and you talk about a guy who planned everything out. You know, I'm reading, finishing up actually Gridiron Genius, and Michael Lombardi in that is just, you know, talking about the brilliance of Bill Walsh, the brilliance of Bill Belichick. You've put it together in a system that you've made accessible now to everybody, that we can do those things now if we dig into this and learn and understand the system.
And that was the goal. It was to allow just a novice to have access to the ability to become an expert without having a family connection to Bill Walsh or Sean McVay or, you know, whoever, you know, you perceive that perceived expert you want to learn from. And so that's why we set out to create this process and to be able to give that. And when you look at the West Coast play call sheet, that's what I kind of used to use. It was, you know, on that sheet, everything is answered on that sheet. The problem is it's not interconnected into a network or a workflow that tells the story with all the different unexpected things that could occur in the game. And so what happened was, is my old play call sheet was a lot like, you know, Bill Walsh's, where I had answers for everything, but as the pressure hit and unexpected things happened that I wasn't prepared for, that sheet looked like it was a million miles away. And so the R4 game plan sheet works more with how a mental model would work for a formation and how a storyboard would work. And that allows you to get back in sync a lot quicker if you get lost in the chaos.
And I know you've mentioned this a little bit as you were going over what CAP was, but the other thing I found very intriguing, and you hear coaches talk about this all the time, I have a whole bunch of Larry Karras coaching tree guys on, and they always talk about players, formation, plays, and really emphasizing like the whole thing starts with personnel. And really there is a huge part of this that is personnel driven.
Man, that is the best thing and the most undercoached, I think, under game planned area that I used to not do a good job of. It was, once again, living on a whiteboard world, living on a static world, well, this play is going to work against this front coverage, but never taking into account the personnel ability of that three technique or that the closure or collision technique of that safety. So R4 defines those accelerators, which we call weapons, or the post-snap movements, and we can grade each one of those with a positive, neutral, or negative grade. So we have a grading system on our platform that teaches that. We go over that in the book. And you can teach a junior high coach how to grade a film now. I mean, and give you an easy grade, and that tells the story of who this is. So we're able to create personnel profiles of defensive players now based on their post-snap movements. That's the key. Like grading how they react, because here's the thing that I learned real quickly as a play caller. How I think cover three should be played is not necessarily how it's going to play out in the game, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, not all cover three is the same. It might be Rip Liz. They might call cover seven or stubby or stump or whatever you call it. But not all defensive coordinators will play that the same, and not all defenses will have the same personnel playing that coverage the same. So we as coaches have to be able to grade and read the reality of how they play within that coverage. And that's what should drive our decision makings, is those post-snap movements of the reality of what we're seeing instead of what we think it should be. And that was the biggest mistake I made early on as a coach was, oh, well, here's the weakness of cover three. Well, surely we'll hit that. And you get into the game and they're not playing it the same, or they may have a Division I player playing that linebacker, or maybe they play a little bit differently with some pattern reading concepts in there. So that's what R4 eliminates, all that confusion in those smoke screens, and allows you to read the reality of what you're seeing.
Dub, I've been thinking a lot and researching probably for a little over a year now, really have dug into player evaluation, you know, spent some time talking with Dan Hatman of the Scouting Academy, talking to some other guys who are in that world, talking and reading books about, you know, player grading, evaluating performance. I got a stack of books behind me that just – from a number of different areas, from strength and conditioning guys, high performance guys, coaches, just really digging into the player side of this. Cause I think if you do it right, a lot of your culture can be built around some of the things you're talking about right here, having those player profiles. I mean, if I know my left guard cannot handle their three technique on his own, I'm kind of foolish, and I'm putting him in a bad situation, and honestly, I'm not in a great position of trust maybe with him afterwards if I go out there with a game plan that's going to rely on him consistently beating a guy that maybe, you know, he can beat 3 times out of 10. That if that's where my game plan lies, because we, you know, run power and he's going to have to primarily block that guy when power comes his way, I'm probably fracturing my culture a little bit when I make those kinds of decisions as a coach. So a lot of it, I feel, again, going back to that idea of culture, relies on us being honest about all those things, what the defensive guy can do, what our guy can do, and how we can win in those situations. And I specifically heard you talk about how the R4 game planning system prepares for all those things as well, which, again, my premise is that's actually what helps build a strong culture.
Without a doubt. And now, I mean, our Sunday work day during the season is fully devoted to those personnel grades. So, for example, on Saturday, we'll break down our game film. We'll draw up our anticipated formations that we anticipate running, and we're getting the defensive coverage and front alignment looks against those formations. And then Sunday, we spend 2 to 3 hours on Sunday dividing up the positions on defense to break down. So every coach has a specific group he's going to break down. And through the R4 grading process, we're grading in the run game. It's penetration, it's plug, it's pursuit, it's the pin ability of those defenders. That's the four accelerators for run game. In the pass game, I'm breaking down cushion, collision, and closure ability of defenders in the pass game. And once we get those grades assembled, we can now sit down collectively as a staff, look at our formations. It's easy to draw up plays that can attack space. But what we have to do, the final confirmation if this play is going to hold up or not, is what are those personnel grades for that 3 technique over that left guard you were talking about. And if we can't handle his positive penetration, then we have to come up with another scheme strategy to neutralize it, or we might have to just mark that play off the board. And that checks and balances system eliminates probably 5 to 6 bad play calls a game for me. And that's the difference between, I mean, going in the playoffs and winning the state championship or losing in those games that matter most in the postseason. It's eliminating those bad play calls. Because how many times have you been a coach, we've all been there, you keep running that power play, right, to that left guard, and it's not working out. You run it 3 times maybe before you finally stop running. And then you get in the film room Saturday and you're like, what the heck was I thinking? I mean, this kid had no chance. And those 2 other times that you ran that play could have been the difference between winning and losing. You could have called, you know, 2 more explosive plays, or you could have eliminated, you know, those drive stopping, you know, runs. And so I think that's the value of the accelerator grading system that we have, that there's nothing out there like it. And it's the thing that will accelerate your game planning the most.
Dub, I've seen you progress as a coach, and I know you're more of a journey guy rather than a destination guy. So I know that what is open is not the end for you right now, that you will continue to innovate and look at things. Any ideas about where you go from here, or what the direction might be, or maybe the things you want to study next?
Yeah, really, it's probably taking this. And now being at a smaller school now, and we're coaching both sides of the ball, we actually started this last year, is we use the R4 system to help us with defensive game planning and defensive calling. Because you think about it, it's just the inverse. So all these tools that we've created, we've just essentially flipped, and we can use them to grade the offensive post-snap reactions and accelerator grades for the offense. So that's probably going to be the next thing that we start to dive into and start to develop is just the defensive component for this, and how we can accelerate decision making from that end.
Well, Dub, I love what you're doing to help coaches and develop people. I've always admired that about you. Please continue to do that and to innovate. For our listeners out there, Dub, please share the information on what you have available for them, as well as how they can connect with you.
Yeah, we have the new book, What is Open, that's available on Amazon.com. We also have Adapt or Die that was written last year for that as well. And then on our website at r4footballsystem.com, we have our online game planning and play calling system. I think over 60 modules that we have in downloadable documents that have our play call sheet, our game planning process, how we do all this in detail. So if you want a one-stop shop, a course to take for you and your staff to go to learn these methods. Think of it as a master's level course in football that works with any offensive system. You can go to our website there and sign up, you and your staff, for that. And you can see me or reach out to me on Twitter at Coach Dub Maddox, and look forward to hearing from you guys. Keith, thanks for your time and what you're doing to advance the game. This has been a pleasure to be on the show again.
Absolutely, Dub. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. Please check out all we're doing on Twitter at our Twitter handle for football coaches at FBDEVCoach. Check out our systems for blocking, defeating blocks, which is in our contact system, shoulder tackling system, which is free, and our advanced tackling system at footballdevelopment.com. Register with your email and get 3 free videos of your choice, as well as the free shoulder tackle system. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please take a few seconds to head over to iTunes and click a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. It helps the podcast.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.